So I can't wait to get into this show. Oh my
Yeah.
God. Yeah. So let's get started.
Do it.
All right. Welcome to the TV Flashcast for Sons of Anarchy. With you as always, this is Lisa Schmeiser.
This is Phil Mosellack.
And this is Tony Sindelar.
And we are going to discuss the penultimate episode, Red Roses. And we're going to go around quick, lightning round. Think of one word to describe this episode. Go, Philip.
I think what I said on Twitter, I'm going to regurgitate myself. I think I said acceptance. Did I
Yes,
not? Okay.
that's what you said.
I'm going to go with breaking down.
Okay, I was going to go with inevitable.
Yeah, those are all good.
Yeah.
So I had read an interview with Peter Weller back in New York Magazine a few weeks ago because he was the dude who directed episode 11, which was, I want to stress, last week's episode, not the one we're discussing now. And Weller said that he was excited because he got to direct what he considers to be the denouement of the series. And he's like, well, the last two episodes are just wrapping up loose ends, and it's all catharsis and all that. What do you think about his assessment? Do you think that we're really just kind of gently rolling to an inevitable stop at this point?
I think there's a lot of action and excitement for an inevitable stop. I mean, the previous episode was a little bit more of the dramatic things, right? We had car chases and whatnot, but there's still kind of a lot of scores to be settled, and it's or at least to be settled going into this episode. And it was, you know, I don't know. I feel like definitely this last episode is feeling like just the last few things need to kind of come to fruition. But I think there was still a bunch of interesting stuff, and I was surprised by things in this episode. Even there was stuff that was spoiled for me because I made the mistake of reading the internet after the after it had aired. But I think there's still a lot that happened.
Yeah, I was fairly shocked, I guess, with some of the things because I wasn't spoiled. And I felt horrible for you, Tony, as soon as I was like, I cannot, like, I would not
Because
have.
that's a heck of a thing to be spoiled on.
Oh, it really is.
I think I should also warn everybody who's listening to this flashcast. I assume you're here because you've already watched the episode and you want to hear us jibber jabber about it. If you haven't, stop now. We're going to talk about things that are big, big spoilers. And if you haven't seen the episode and you haven't been spoiled and yet you're here, let us know how that happened and stop listening until you finish the series. Thank you.
Right. I'll insert some sort of spoiler hornage right here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I have to be honest, of the three significant series regular deaths on this show, the one that was actually the biggest surprise for me was Unser's.
I'm with you 100%.
So before we get started with that, let me actually pull up the timer and attempt to recap 2 hours worth of Sons of Anarchy action in 60
You can do
seconds.
it.
All right,
Yes.
ready, set, go. So the good news is that Juice enjoyed a delicious slice of pie this episode. The even better news is he's no longer going to be around to be sodomized by white supremacists and or Chinese gangsters, respectively. That's right. He clocks out this episode. Also significant in this episode, Jax appears to be shuffling around several major criminal components to guarantee that either the club or his business will survive once he's out of it. It looks like he's planning on killing himself or accepting Mr. Mayhem. Also appears that the other club presidents are on their way to voting for a kill for Jax, even though he mans up and fesses up that yes, he killed Jerry for all the wrong reasons. Then Jax hits the road and probably heads to Oregon, zips off, makes an 8-hour drive in under 8 seconds, offs Unser, offs his mom, comes back. He has one last fling with Wendy, but one hopes that she's going to take Nero up on his offer, and she and the kids will be in his car and on the way to Mexico by the end of the next episode. We can hope. Done. That was it. So that was it. There were three significant deaths this time out. There was Juice's, which has felt a lot like Clay's in that you just kept expecting it to happen and expecting it to happen. And he died with a lot of grace. And then you had Unser's, which was a huge surprise, and then Jax kills Gemma in the final in the final 10 minutes of the episode. Do we want to talk which death do we want to tackle first?
Well,
Let's
let me just start at the top here, because there's two huge things that happened that gave me the heads up on at least Jax's mindset. That kid was Johnny Smiles all day long from the time he woke up
Yeah.
Now, and then he was throwing down some weird, and I know I'm going to get this wrong, but like the future present tense of when he was talking to Nero. And the way in which he talked to Nero, I knew something was up. Like he was just, he's ready to go down to the gallows. But what is this deal with the hurt leg?
Yeah, that was weird.
He kicked a car in the last episode. He kicked a car. And so I guess he's not shaking it off for some reason. Because I actually had to go back and try to remember what had happened. And he kicked a car. My sense through this whole episode is when he woke up, he was like, I'm going to die. Before I die, I'm going to make things right. And in that respect, he's a lot more like his father, Clay, than his actual father, JT. Because when you think about it, John Teller left a lot of things horribly unsettled, like that secret second family in Ireland, you know, a grieving wife who's already grieving the loss of one child and a son who needed him, and a club that was kind of in disarray. Like, John left a huge mess. Whereas Clay had spent most of his final weeks trying to wrap everything up so that Gemma would be taken care of and that nothing bad would happen to the people that he had actually cared about at one time. And it seems to me that Jax is doing all of that too. Like, he thinks that the last thing he can do for his club is to make sure that they come through it comparatively unscathed. And he knows that the boys are in good hands with Wendy, as does Gemma, because she made Wendy the conservator for what's-his-nut up in Oregon. What's his name? I can't remember.
Hal Linden, but we're gonna call him something else. I can't remember.
Yeah, whatever his name was. Frank?
Or Hal? No, it's Hal Holbrook. What? Hal Linden? Where am I going with that?
Mash? Is that what it is?
I guess it's mash em ups.
So yeah, I think it's just a question: does Jax kill himself, or who kills him? Like, how does he die? I guess is the question now. But that's the next episode. To get back to this one, I like that Jax finally like rises to the occasion only when he decides to completely check out of it. The one thing that really got me, and I think is going to play out as a late stage tragedy, is when Nero tells Unser he has to get up to Oregon before Jax does, and Unser's like, oh, you love Gemma, and Nero says, this is not about Gemma, this is me trying to save Jax. And that really got me.
Yeah.
Because it's Nero recognizing that Gemma's past redemption. But, you know, he's got this strong filial bond to Jax. Like, you know, my whack job theory is that Jax is kind of the surrogate healthy son that Lucius was never going to be.
Mm.
And so he desperately wants to make sure that Jax, his son, doesn't have to go through the soul-searing act of matricide. Which he does. And when Jax comes back and Nero knows what happens, it's going to be like the final heartbreak.
Yeah.
And my hope is that like he packs up the kids and takes off and it's just like, adios, bye.
I think it's going to be something worse. Because I had thought in this episode, he'd pack up the kids and we'd say goodbye to Nero. Right. And this would be his last appearance. But instead, Gemma's dead, and he has kind of sent Unser to his death, right?
Yeah.
So, like, there, you know, something bad's coming from that.
Yeah. It is funny how, you know, I don't like having the kids on screen, and yet I'm like, oh, please let them get out of this at this point. You know, they've lost their mother. They've lost their grandmother, who was the reason they lost their mother, true, but they lost their grandmother.
I think they're going to be okay. I mean, I think, like,
I hope so.
Wendy's the one redemption story in the whole thing, right? And like, she's okay. Like, she has come back from her addiction, and now she's their mom again. And like, they, you know, the there may be the sad scene where they're just with her at the end, but like, relatively speaking, they're okay. You know,
I'd say so. I mean, and the crazy thing is, you know, Nero and her have gotten along so well during the season.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they've really kind of connected, you know, she had that whole scene where it was, you know, where it was Jax, when she first met Nero and it was really, you know, they have a lot of common denominations on their lives. Yeah. And it seems like Nero, and especially when they had that sit down, is basically ready to say, look, okay, the Bizlats, I'm an old man now.
Yeah.
And if you guys want to get involved with that, then do it. That's okay. You know,
I can't stop you from killing yourselves is basically what he said this episode. And it was interesting where he's concentrating his energies, because instead of declaring his loyalty to the streets or his club, he's declaring it to two children that belong to a murdered woman and a gangster whom he knows only because he was banging the kid's grandma.
Yeah.
But you think about it, he's made his loyalties very clear in the last few episodes that he's absolutely done. And he's going to focus on trying to break the cycle with the kids.
The guy's got a big heart, and he's all about home repair now.
I think that's like the pull quote for the episode. He's all about the home repair now. Yeah. So it's just my worry is that Nero is the final tragedy. My hope is that it doesn't come to pass for that, but I don't trust Kurt Sutter not to be like, ha ha, at like the 145 mark next week or whatever it's going to be. So
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Man, but who would kill him?
I think Jax.
Oh God, there's so many something. People who would, yeah, at this point. There's Borowski.
Yeah, that was, I was surprised that we did not see Borowski this episode.
Borowski is still in the wind.
Yeah.
And now that everybody knows what he did as far as the guns go, there's all sorts of factions. I mean, we can eliminate the Chinese because mm-hmm. they're out of the game for now. Yeah. But you still have the one-niners. My suspicion is that the quote-unquote unwritten bylaw that Jax wants lifted is the no black, no brown in the club.
That's
that
right.
Seems likely. I wonder if it's... I was trying to think of what else that could be.
And my guess is, yeah, the Grim Bastard's going to get patched in is my guess.
Yeah. I mean, that was weird because they didn't show us what, like, they did the cutaway and then they cut back to them agreeing without us hearing what the agreement was. Yeah. And I was trying to think if there's anything else it could be. Because why keep that mysterious? But I don't know. Yeah.
Well, and there's Jax also, made a promise to it. He made a promise to, what's his name?
TC?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah. Something like that. And he said, you know, I can only do one miracle a day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have to admit, I groaned when the Irish came back on the screen because I'm so tired of the Irish. I'm so tired of the Irish.
Also, like, what percentage of the true IRA are corrupt?
All of them.
Apparently all of them. Like, yeah. And it's like, yeah, I know you're a criminal organization, but you're also like basically supposed to be like terrorists based around an ideal. And is literally 80% of your organization corrupt?
Well, I think what's really funny about it is when you take a look at how everything on this show has shaken out, like the Irish are, like you said, 80% corrupt. The Sons of Anarchy have driven themselves into the ground. But you look at how well organized the Mayans are.
Mm-hmm. Like, Mayans look like Mensa.
The Mayans have been like freakily effective the entire series. And it's almost like they're the mirror image of the Sons of Anarchy. Because remember that... oh God, who's the head of the Mayans? I'm blanking on his name.
Alvarez?
Yeah, yep. Alvarez killed his own son in the first season, remember?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he killed his own son and was like, oh God, he means business. And like, the Mayans have become this perfectly ticking clockwork where like there's been like a peaceful transition of power from Alvarez to the next generation, and they're making inroads on the streets, and he owns Stockton. And then you look at Damon Pope's enterprises, and it's still ticking along despite the fact that Damon Pope is dead and the new dude is in jail, and it is still something to be reckoned with. And I don't know if this is intentional or if Kurt Sutter is like, look, you know, this is the future of 21st century America, so you better accept that, you know, white people are not going to be running everything for much longer. But there's just this definite component where everybody had their act together except like the white gangs. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they've always worked that way. They've always seemed to be very, very clockworking and...
Yeah.
No, there's no wiggle room. No one seems to get real jangled up in emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of, to me, there's always the kind of weird thing where you have all these street gangs, right, who are really kind of, they're a lot harder, and they're kind of like perhaps a life that they did not choose. Yeah. Whereas, like, the Sons of Anarchy are obviously, you know, they've got their fair share of murderers and other felons.
They all kind of drifted into it, though. Yeah.
It's a lot closer to a hobby, right?
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to, like, this was, you know, there was no other choice in our neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a club. Make our way. It's not a gang.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I don't, you know, I don't have any sympathy for them, right? I mean, it's like, why don't you guys just get jobs? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the thing is you can make the argument that, you can make an argument that the Sons of Anarchy, the dudes who are in it kind of are stand-ins for the same people who are finding themselves downsized out of jobs across America, like mm-hmm. guys who used to make good livings on docks, loading and unloading things, or guys who used to make good livings on, you know, as mechanics or small or mm-hmm. you know, skilled laborers or warehouse workers, right? And exporting jobs and robots and much more efficient chains have taken all of that away. Yeah. Like the Wire went into it, you yep. know, much more somberly in season two. But you can make the argument that the Sons of Anarchy are the men that the 21st century has no room for.
But well, what I mean, it reminds me a lot of Pittsburgh.
What I find striking is, again, yeah, like Pittsburgh. But what I found striking is, like, the Pope organization found a way to make it work.
Yeah.
Like, they basically carried out, like, the Stringer Bell wet dream, which is, we'll have a legitimate front for our business and we'll make our money without, yeah. you know, having to put our own butts in the line of fire, and we'll outsource all the gross stuff. And Alvarez is getting there, too, because what are the brothels if not their way to make money to generate more, you know, more legitimate revenue? Because you know mm-hmm. that's where they're headed. So, yeah. you know, it's just, it seems to me like this whole series has actually been about the decline of old American assumptions and the fact that people have not been paying attention to where the money and the talent is coming from these days.
And perhaps there will be the kind of the conclusion where the only way that they exist is when they yeah. integrate, right?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, that tells you just where they are. So
if you work together, you uh-huh. can accomplish a lot more. You can yes. destroy entire wings of segments of gangs.
Yes, exactly. If you have a rainbow coalition of yeah. violence, yeah.
The people but. United.
Yeah. Yes. The people united cannot be difficult.
Look, I mean, you get so much more done if yeah. if well, in this particular case, it was uh-huh. whites and super whites
yeah. mm-hmm.
working, and they can pull an eyeball out.
I think it's remarkable that you see that the so-called white supremacists on this show have always been relegated to the margins, and they're always perpetually in jail. They yeah. are. You know, I mean, granted, I live in the Bay. I live in like a Bay Area bubble, so it's not like I see them routinely running around my neighborhood mm-hmm. or something. But you look at this show, and it's like, wow, almost every Nazi on it is in jail. They're well, about there to is, go to jail, or they just got out of jail.
Well, I mean, there is some connection to that in that
yeah.
historically, the Aryan Brotherhood is a prison gang that yeah. has a presence in the non-prison world, whereas there are other gangs that have a presence on the street or that are in the streets and have some presence in yeah. right because the. Different gangs evolve in different places, and the Aryan Brotherhood is historically a prison gang.
Yeah,
but yeah, it yeah. turns out having very you know having swastika tattoos really limits your options in life. Being a convict.
That's right. I mean, it pretty much it raises a flag saying, "Hey, if you're like me, I can be with you."
Yeah. Well, it's that they're actually. I haven't read a lot about this, but there is a lot of segregation by ethnicity yeah. in prison too. So that's being reinforced.
And yep.
maybe that's another one of the things the show is saying, which is that when you throw people in jail, when they come out, they really don't have the social skills mm-hmm. or the cognitive skills or the practical experience they're going to need to survive in the 21st century.
I didn't know there was pie in prison, so I've learned something.
I know, really good looking pie from that.
Yeah,
too.
I'm questioning the accuracy of that. I don't know. Yeah. Who am I to say?
No.
It looked very delicious.
Yeah.
Juice got a much better death than I thought he was going to get.
Well, I am still a little, ahead, like, Tony. I mean, and maybe we are not supposed to understand, but I kind of had a hard time understanding / believing pretty much everything Juice said or did for, like, the last four episodes.
Yeah.
Because he just seemed to be kind of all over the place in terms of, like, when he's going to be completely telling the truth about everything, when he's not going to say anything, even though he's like locked in a room with someone who could help him, when he's in jail and has been kind of screwed over by the club or not, like, and then the last thing he does is kind of make sure that his death is not a minor inconvenience. And I don't know. To me, it doesn't quite make sense, but maybe the idea is just, he is completely lost now that, you know, the club yeah. is no more to him and he's just flailing around saying crazy stuff and, you know.
Yeah, because he looked like he'd lost his mind when he's all,
exactly.
oh, Jenna's at the center. But, yeah. like, this episode, he was, like, crazy lucid. Yeah, and,
right.
And then he makes the strategic decision that he's like, well, I'm going to die anyway, so let me die in the way that best benefits the club. And that's a heck of a lot less spiteful than I would be. Mm-hmm. Because it was pretty clear, like, remember Jax put him with, oh, you can buy your way out with this. Mm-hmm. And then, like, at some point he realized that Jax is a lying liar who lies.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all of that,
yeah,
yeah.
I love it. Well, go for
and
it.
And then, despite all that, he's all, well, you know what? up until the last few years of my life, the club was pretty good to me. So why not give them the best advantage? No.
But see, you shouldn't be this confused. And this is either due to part on bad acting or bad writing.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure which, because every time
Juice is by himself, writing. I think Sutter fell in love with the character, and he really has a hard time pulling the trigger when they need to go.
I think Juice probably should have not. He should have probably kind of disappeared for a while, right? And that was, I mean, I think the timing didn't quite work out right. Like, he knows that he wants Juice to go into hiding, and then he knows he needs him to end up in jail and die. But there was all that weird filler, right, where he's like, why has he not left Charming for 3 episodes? And, you know, like, he keeps leaving and coming back, and, like, he's, like, circling, and it some of it is just, like, Juice has nowhere to go, and he's not smart enough to just go off on his own and start a new life. But the other part of it feels like kind of weak writing in terms of we have this character in a holding pattern, and we want to show him every episode instead of having him disappear for 4 episodes, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes he's super capable with Photoshop, and then in jail he turns into, you know, De Niro and Taxi Driver.
I think that because Theo Rossi seems like an all-around good guy, and was apparently, you know, people liked him on set, and because he does bring it when he acts, my guess is that they kept around for a lot longer than they needed to. But I also think that's one of the weaknesses of this show in general, is that they are unwilling to pull the plug on a lot of characters before, you know, and there's been a lot of stuff that's been drawn out. You know, frankly, I'm surprised they killed Bobby with as much alacrity as they did. So that was one death. Unser's cancer did not get him. Jax did. So that was two.
That was surprising to me. I thought that was pretty shocking, right?
It was.
Especially kind of sandwiched in there between the two deaths that we kind of assumed were coming, right?
Yeah. Oh, you know, I thought the worst part. Well, there are lots of things about Unser's death that make it very sad. There are a lot of things about Unser this episode that are just super tragic. But I think, like, the saddest thing is when Jax and Gemma, like, have this big moment in the living room of her old house. And then they just kind of casually step over Unser's body and walk out to the garden. And they don't even spare a look at it. I mean, and it just it speaks volumes about how little regard they had for this guy.
No, he's disposable.
Yes, right? Always. And, you know, you think about it, and this entire episode is basically like the writers and the directors screaming, he's wasted his life. He's wasted his life. These people have lied to him and used him nonstop. They've never listened to a word he's said. Every effort that he's ever made to try to, you know, be a guy has been cynically used and abused, and he lost his marriage over this. He lost his job over this. Like, he lost his, you know, he lost his pension over this. And in the end, he wasn't even a good enough cop to figure out who the hell killed Tara. It had to be laid out for him.
Yep.
And then he drives up to Oregon. He's too late. He's been given this mission. He can't even complete it because then the love of his life's psycho son comes in and plugs him a few times. And they step over his cooling body and have a moment with a Hummel figurine.
And she, but
he's not,
basically
he's not
kind
a good guy in that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was their tool. And he got used like a tool.
Yeah.
And I mean, Gemma kind of, I mean, gets him killed, right? She offers him up, right? I mean, he says, I've already called the cops. And she says, no, he hasn't. Right?
Yeah. Now, is that I like the scene wanting to die?
I think so.
I think dying was the easy way out for her. And this is where we get into where I rant. Like, and bear in mind, remember, I love Gemma as a character, but I honestly feel like killing her off was supposed to be this big tragic thing. And it was actually the most merciful thing Jax could have done. Because the real torture for her, the real living death, would have been if he had been like, I came up here to let you know that I know what you did to my wife. I'm not turning you into the cops. You can never come back into California. I'm going to have a member of Sam Crow Rogue River on your ass 24 hours a day, and they're going to make sure you never cross the state line. I'm dead to you. My kids are dead to you. You're going to die alone and outcast from the club. Like, that would have been the worst thing in the world that could have happened to Gemma. Because everything would have been taken out of her control. But instead, this way, she got to have all of her goodbyes with her grandsons. And she gets to push Jax's buttons a few more times with, I love you, my baby boy. Yeah. Go ahead. And this is who we are.
You have to do this. It's who we are.
Exactly. Yeah. But she basically forces him to pull the trigger. She tells him he has no choice, and he believes her, and he does it. And it's a mercy killing because she doesn't have to go through the humiliation of a trial where she admits that she killed her own daughter-in-law. and she doesn't have to go through the agony of being permanently separated from these people she knows are still alive, whom she loves, it's over. She's walked away from her consequences.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting because you have these three mm-hmm. characters who basically know that they're going to die, who are kind of yeah. walking around coming to terms, because we've got Gemma and Juice, and then it seems like Jax, right? And they're all, yeah. you know, kind of dead men walking, staggering uh-huh. around, trying to make sense of their all the horrible mistakes they've made. Yeah.
All right, now let's talk about the real root of the matter. How do homeless people move so quickly around the California area? Is there secret?
No kidding. Like, yeah, especially since she was up by the border.
I mean, Lisa, you're going to know this.
Yeah, it's 8 hours from where they were up to Eureka, and there's it's true there are circuits that street people travel, especially if they're panhandlers. And the only reason I know this is because Dan Savage wrote about it when he was writing his adoption memoir, and he talks about the circuits that people do up and down the West Coast.
Yeah, there's an East Coast equivalent too. There's people who go to in Boston and New York during the warm months, and then they go down to like New Orleans and places like that during the cold months.
Yeah, but I thought it was striking that the homeless lady pops up and it's Gemma who sees her again. Because you remember that in season one, she saw her outside the pharmacy when the lady said, Abel will save us. Abel will save us all. And then Gemma's like, what do you say? And she's like, able to feed my child. And they're like, no. And you realize that there was that weird demi-prophetic moment. And then I'm trying to remember her appearance in season two. She had another appearance in season one when she gives Jax a blanket when he's falling asleep in the cemetery. But yeah, she always seems to pop up, and there seems to be no rhyme or reason to when she does it, because her appearance last year was right after Tara got killed.
Well, and that's Rat's girlfriend's mother.
That's Rat's girlfriend. Well, that's
or something.
That seems to be the consensus, because remember that they had the window breaking thing, and Jax goes to talk to the family, and everyone sees the pictures of the lady, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's the homeless lady.
Right.
So, what I wonder and what I hope is that he leaves it kind of unanswered.
That seems like the best way to, because I don't think there's any answer to it that's going to be
satisfying. That's going to satisfy anybody.
Yeah, because it's, she is alive and she's been wandering around, appearing at weird moments.
Yeah.
Is not satisfying.
Yeah.
She's a ghost. Totally not satisfying. An interesting turn.
Yeah, the homeless lady popped up.
I think she's been once a season.
Once a season, because she popped up, I think, in season five. She popped up in the episode.
The dog match.
Yeah, where she's talking. She's it's okay. And she's babying or soothing something. Like, I think she has a stuffed animal.
Yeah.
And that sort of, and that episode sort of dovetails with Tig adopting the dog, and you see that, he's going to be okay. He's not going to be okay. But you're like, he's going to be okay. And then last year she's scrounging around the dumpsters where the murder weapon got dumped. And now she's got a baby carriage and she's at a rest stop. I will say anecdotally, there were a lot more homeless. I drove up to Portland and back this summer and did a really quick trip to pick up a new kitchen table. And, I will say that at the rest stops in Oregon, they actually had homeless encampments where people could set up and panhandle and things like that. They don't have those in California. So it seems to imply that this woman's on the move.
Mm-hmm. Schwarzenegger doesn't like that kind of stuff.
I don't know what it is, to be honest with you.
But now she has a car.
Yeah.
So she could come back down to Charming anytime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, she could. Yeah. A lot of people do. And didn't Gemma leave her car so that nobody could trace her?
Exactly. Yep. No, so she could ride with Michael Chiklis.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that was such a... Look, I love Michael Chiklis. I even watched that... I even watched, like, every episode of Better Than Human or whatever that was when he and his family get, like, the superpowers.
Oh, my gosh. That just Julie sounds Benz. Horrid. I can't even imagine it.
No, he was phenomenal in it. I think he's a phenomenal actor. I loved him on The Shield. I loved him in Better Than Human or whatever that was called. I really liked him in Fantastic Four because he was like the human heart of that movie and all that. And
something had to be.
You're just
Oh, that movie.
Let's agree that Michael Chiklis was in Fantastic Four.
You can say he's the best thing about that movie, and you know, yes, he was. It felt like gratuitous fan service to have him show up here.
Yeah. I liked it. I mean, I thought the character was kind of amusing, and yeah, they're trying to work in a lot of the S.H.I.E.L.D. actor cameos, and I don't know.
That feels like fan service.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is, but I appreciated it. So, yeah. I mean, at least
it's a small role. Just a bit role. That's cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that they get a kind of mildly interesting character, right? As opposed to all of them just being either a cop mm-hmm. or a gang member or something, right?
Right.
It would be great if it was his character as in the S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I thought
and
about
he,
that too.
And that's what he's doing now.
That's too much fan service. That's, you know, a lethal dose of fan service. So.
If he's like, well, this beats dust work or whatever, you're like, oh no, here we go.
I'm on assignment, undercover, as a truck driver.
Yeah, well, this is actually one of my complaints about this show in general, is that starting from about season 4 on, they really had... they really awkwardly bad about integrating some of the cameos. Like, I remember when Joel McHale showed up as like the handsome grifter who bangs Gemma and takes her purse. I'm like, no, that didn't happen. That's because it was a little too smirky and self-knowing. And look, everyone, Joel McHale is on Sons of Anarchy. And, you know, I felt that way about when Ashley Tisdale showed up as a hooker. And I felt that way when Leah Michelle showed up as a truck stop waitress. And I felt that way about both Chiklis and Charisma Carpenter, because it seems to be like, look at all my famous friends who want to be in this movie. And you're just like, ugh, fine, whatever, you know? Like, the best casting choices they have are the people who just kind of quietly, unobtrusively work their way into the scene, and they're natural and they stay there. Mm-hmm. You know, Walton Goggins is the best example.
Yeah.
CCH Pounder was phenomenal. I'm trying to think of some. Oh, Titus Welliver, you know, like... Mm-hmm. Basically dudes who can just seamlessly slip into an ensemble. There's like an entire class of these actors in Hollywood, and when Sons of Anarchy casting sticks with those, it's great. But when they stunt cast, it really irritates the living Jesus out of me.
I thought Jimmy Smits was a stunt.
I did too. And,
I mean, because Jimmy Smits has, in my opinion, he can have it's almost like the Ted, what's his face? Whenever this guy joins the show, it's almost like the John Cryer thing. If he joins the show, it's probably gonna end.
Yeah,
and he can either make it or break it. Mm-hmm. And in the West Wing, for example, mm-hmm. I didn't exactly feel him in that. It got a little hokey, and then it ended. So it was like, okay, there we go. But I just didn't know where, you know. And then I even thought he started bringing in residual baggage from Star Wars, and I was just like, I don't know, I don't want it.
Yeah.
But he turned it, I mean, you know.
Alderaan trauma.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't believe in him, but.
Yeah.
But it can happen, and that's what I was scared about.
Yeah.
He did a good job, though, because I think I had those exact same fears from The West Wing and from Star Wars, and I was just like, oh, he's going to be here for 6 episodes, and we'll deal with it, and then he'll be gone, right? And it's like, no, he's going to stick around for a while, and he'll be a big deal, and he'll be integral to a lot of plots, and, you know.
Yeah, no, I think
he pulled it off.
Yeah, it was like slipping a piece of paper into a sandwich. Yeah, you can eat it, but it's not quite right.
Yeah. Don't eat those sandwiches.
Yeah. No.
That's a good metaphor, though. I really like it.
Well, there you go. That's the first time anybody's ever said that one. I guarantee it. All trademark.
Right. Slipping a piece of paper into a sandwich. So, but yeah, no, it's funny because Gemma had her stupid, peaceful death, which is what it was, basically. And I sat there and I thought, you know, what's been striking about this show is Clay gets killed and he's very at peace with it. And all that happens is he gets plugged 20 times by people that he used to think were his friends. And, you know, Juice gets stabbed directly in the jugular by somebody who obviously, like, was feeling sentimental that minute. And, and then Gemma
just
gets...
poetry.
Yeah, and then Gemma gets plugged in the head, and she's down for the count with among the roses. And then I thought about how Tara was killed, where it was just this horrible battle, and her face was shoved into dirty dishwater while somebody stabbed her with a fork repeatedly. And I thought, wow, this is just... these deaths don't match in any way, shape, or form. Like... Tara went out in a horrible miasma of pain and terror by somebody who wanted to hurt her as much as possible. and Gemma gets executed by somebody who loves her very much.
Okay. Yeah. Are there, I got a point on this one. Uh-huh. Okay, first off, you're exactly right. It's very romanticized.
Yeah.
Because on a twofold thing, and I usually don't go down this road, that gunshot was
it
so dumb.
It would have blown off her head.
Exactly. It was so dumb looking. I happened to actually catch it on a pause, and I was like, this is bad. But who was taking care of those plants? There's no way. Mm-hmm. I mean, Miracle Grow or not, those were finally
And they had electricity still.
Oh,
yes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No,
highly. I mean, I don't want to nitpick it to death, but it was a problem when you look back at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And do we need to go over the mayhem vote?
Well, I want to get back to the Gemma thing for a minute here, which is my question. Did it feel right to you that she died?
I think so. I liked, she was clearly prepared to die. Yeah. I liked in her little, because she kind of got to confess in a couple different ways, right? She got to confess to her father, who's out of it, and then she kind of gets to confess to Jax. And I even liked the part where, you know, I mean, when she says, like, I love Tara, and he's like, no, that's, you know, you don't get to say that, because, like, you know, we both know that that's not true. You can say the other stuff, and we'll get through this as painlessly as we can, but like that lie is too far, right?
Yeah.
For you, and you know your other lies are okay, but you know let's not pretend here. We know where this is going.
I personally don't approve that she was allowed to die on her own terms.
Yeah, that's what I'm. Like you said, there's a moment where I'm like, no,
it's not justice. Yeah,
At the same time, I don't know if I can accept, you know, Jax brutally killing her either. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to accept that at all.
I mean, for getting killed by her own son, that seemed like the only way that we could kind of swallow that, right? I mean,
well, the thing is she what I always come back to is the fact that, and this goes into Sons of Anarchy having a billion layers and tons of symbolism and things like that that people don't always think of. But you think about her, she always identifies herself as this nurturer. Mm-hmm. And they made a huge effort to, Gemma always loved flowers. She always loved gardening. And there were some callbacks to that all through the series. You know, like she rallied to save the community garden. Nate, that's her dad's name. Because she and Nate used to spend time there. And she had a garden in the back of the house and a greenhouse where she grew pot. But... it's true, she did. That's how she and Unser, remember, like in early seasons, she supplied him with pot to offset the effects of the medication he was on. So it was supposed to be, Gemma's this nurturer. I remember this God's fierce mother. But the irony is everything that she's ever planted or tried to nurture has gone rotten. You know, like the club did, and it coiled up and died. And she's this corrosive influence, and she may have produced Jax as her son. But you can argue that her masterstroke is in getting him to kill her. Like she pushed his buttons right up to the moment he pulled the trigger.
Yeah,
which is kind of nice in the cute little story that she tells the trucker.
Yeah,
I have no children, and my name is Rose.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is basically her taking on her mother's identity.
Yep.
But you know, her basically talking Jax into killing her. You know, she likes it. She's basically casting herself, I'm such a good mother that this is the only way my boy is going to feel better. But it's a fundamentally selfish act because it's going to tear him apart inside.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't even think about that. And so that's all, I love you from the purest place of my heart. And the thing is that whatever Gemma loves, Gemma destroys.
That's
the whole theme of the series. Whatever Gemma loves, Gemma destroys.
And there's even kind of the, like, we have to do this is the kind of like, this is inevitable and not, this is the result of all these horrible mistakes that my entire life was about, right? And you know, again, it's that whole, like, these people don't necessarily have to be part of a life of crime. They have opted into it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, is that there is a total opt-in. It's not as if, and maybe this goes back to the whole, you know, the Mayans, where when you're in a gang related area, it seems more natural. But in this case, you know, it's, hey, we're going to go ahead and just jump right into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beats showing up for work, right? I don't care for cubicles. Where's my gun? Yeah.
And if I can't get hired, I might as well, work with some of my buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm angry about the Gemma death because it feels a little bit like Kurt couldn't give Gemma her just desserts. Nope. You know, like she got a much better death than she deserved. And
I think you've brought me around. I don't know how brutal or violent a death I think you're right that it was not kind of appropriate to her, who is kind of, the main antagonist behind everything.
Yeah, in some ways, I feel like the hand that Maureen and Trini were dealt was much, much worse, because they're stranded in Ireland. You know, it was an illicit family. She was basically a single mom. They're in a fairly toxic political situation. Like, the Sons of Anarchy went over there, and they left the whole place in mayhem. By the time they left, Maureen's partner had been tossed off a roof, and, there was that ruptured relationship with her daughter, once her daughter figured out what was going on, and it just... I think exile would have been the worst thing that could have happened to Gemma, and it wouldn't have killed Jax's soul. It wouldn't have forced him to kill his mother. And instead, Gemma got off easy because, she got to choose the manner of her departure, and she got to do it on her terms. Mm-hmm. And that's not an option that she gave Tara.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why I'm still really mad about it. So, I hate that she's ruined the last of Jax's heart, and I hate that she had an easy death.
But see, I think Jax could do it, and I almost thought he wasn't going to do it. I thought he was going to break. Uh-huh. But I think this kind of culminates with the morning where he's Johnny Smiles. He already knows, I'm a dead man walking. I can basically do anything I want. I can love everybody and hate everybody all at the same time, because, frankly, I may have a couple more days left.
Uh-huh.
I loved his requisite, I'm going to fill everyone in later, trust me line. But I did love the expression on all of them, because they were just like, they looked like such dopey idiots, because they are, right? They're just like, fill it in later. What could happen? It's not like we're in like a really dangerous line of work where people are getting killed every day. Like, keep your secrets.
Hey, what could go wrong? By the way, how much like booze did Chibs drink during that meeting? Because that bottle was almost full. All of the booze,
yeah.
And then by the time he gets out, there's like just, a couple inches left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy was hard drinking.
Mm-hmm. We didn't get to see that much of him. Because there were all the people. I mean, this episode was pretty jammed with stuff. There was not. That's this thing now. The last couple episodes, it's like, it's all stuff. There's no filler. Because we didn't really see a lot of Chibs, and we didn't see any of Sheriff Althea. She didn't appear. Seems like something has to happen with that plot line. We didn't see Borowski at all. I figured Marks would appear by now, but we haven't seen him yet either. So,
see, somebody asked me, are we going to see Marks? And I said, I don't think we are.
You think he's gone?
I mean, this goes down to, okay, so we're down to the last episode, correct?
Yeah, and it can't be a 4-hour episode.
Right. I just don't see where he can fit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not going to, like, penetrate the club and kill Jax. I mean, I think that's going to be Chibs is going to kill Jax. Or, because it's going to be a mayhem vote that he's asked for.
Yeah.
Or they do something.
Or he kills himself,
I'm leaning toward he kills himself. Did you see they had the fancy bike was in the background in the scenes in the garage? I feel like they're building toward he's going to be on his father's restored bike and die, or appear to die in some way that is symbolically similar to JT's death.
Yeah.
Whether by his own choice or not, right?
Yeah, I have a feeling that you're right, and it's going to be, Jax goes out like his father did in some way, but the kids are down in Mexico, and they've broken free, and the cycle is broken.
Yeah, and he has closed all the books, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know? I mean, as long as it doesn't end with Jax being bodily assumed into heaven with Tara waiting for him there while Bobby dresses up like Elvis, I'll be happy.
Now, could they potentially do, the Machiavellian Jax, and he fake his death, and the club goes on with it, but basically it's a goodbye. I'm going away, but I'm dead. I could accept that. And he goes and lives with Nero down on the farm with the goats.
I, I think that would, I don't know. I feel like he needs to, I mean, he's done a lot of bad stuff and he needs to, he can't get off that easily.
So we have to have atonement.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe there will be, because he gets to do his Machiavellian things all the time. And maybe we see something ridiculous where he manages to get the order of operations right so that he gets the Grim Bastards patched in so they can help him vote to not get him killed and he's okay. Yeah. And then Nero shows up and shoots him or something, right? But, I mean, I think he's going to, I don't know. I don't think he walks away.
You know, I didn't think about this. And, it seems as though Nero doesn't care necessarily about what happens to Gemma. But I think, is it possible that he could go sideways and be so upset that he would kill Jax? Mm-hmm.
Maybe he kills Jax because Jax wants to keep him from... Jax wants him to take the kids. So there goes that idea, because I was originally going to say, maybe Jax tries to stand in the way of him and the kids.
My question is also, I think Chucky's going to do something, and it's probably going to be stupid, right?
Because they've really been amping up Chucky's attachment to Gemma.
Yeah.
And remember, he had that ties to the Chinese. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I think he's going to do something stupid. It's just a question of how stupid is it going to be.
Absolutely right.
And I like that scene before Unser goes up, where Nero pulls up and he's talking to Unser, and they've got Chucky like just in the frame in the background. And I thought that was actually pretty neat with the, like, you know, basically the three men who are kind of in love with Gemma, you know, arguing about how they're going to solve this. But yeah, I think, you know, they're building for him to do something bad.
Either he's
going to get himself killed, or he's going to kill somebody else, or maybe
because why show him and get him so,
and you know, we sometimes up. You know, sometimes they want to get us revved up about things that might happen that don't happen, but it's I feel like, you know, he is more likely to do something stupid and irrational than Nero is, right? Nero is
right.
You know, Nero is he's the peacekeeper, right? And he seems more likely to, you know, slam his car door and drive away than to, you know, get in a shootout with Jax. Or the rest of the club or anything like that. So.
Well, and he's buried his guns. It's clear that he's buried his guns out. But I couldn't believe the rest of the presidents. Like, they were almost like in awe. I thought they were going to be more shocked, but they were like shocked that, you're telling us the truth. This means you have to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really took them sideways.
Yeah, that scene was weird. And we did have the stuff where there was stuff happening in that scene that we weren't shown. But yeah, I couldn't. I mean, it seemed weird because it was like, I mean, is the fate already sealed? But we're going to let you walk around for a couple days and there was stuff that it seems like they weren't entirely filling us in on, in terms of like making sure that the club votes the right way. And what does that actually mean? Right. And we don't 100% know what a mayhem vote means. Right. I mean, in terms of, is it just the president's
murder?
Yeah. But is it just the president's? Is it everybody?
Again, the outlaws with their crazy structured bylaws.
Robert's Rules of Anarchy.
There we go.
You guys are always coming up with the good titles. Robert's Rules of Anarchy. My guess is, if you're planning on killing the president of the whole shebang, then every charter has to be unanimous on it.
How do you even, like, do they have an electronic system? Because they've got hundreds of members. It just seems...
I mean,
and they are not one... They do not patch in enough bureaucrats. The Sons of Anarchy is a story of the failure of middle management, is what it
That's
is.
That's right.
So. Yes. Again, not a bad metaphor. Oh my gosh, the Sons of Anarchy is economic analog for the 21st century.
Oh man, things do not look good going forward.
Yeah.
No, I think Indian Hills is going to run the whole joint after this, though.
Well,
he rides in like Fortinbras.
I was trying to think of, because he says the unofficial bylaws, and I was trying to think of, is there anything else that could be other than the race thing, right? Like, could it be that Sam Crow is no longer like the mother chapter, right? That some other chapter gets to be the main thing. I don't know, but I was trying to rack my brain, just because it seemed a little too obvious for them to be cagey about it, but maybe they just don't, you know, sometimes they don't assume we're as smart as we are. And they, like, let's show you in this flashback this character that you totally remember to remind you that he's important.
Right, but, you know, here's a little bit of a problem I just have with oral tradition in general. But when you put in, when you say things like, you know, there's an unwritten bylaw. Okay, so that means that all these other charters that were started by you, the mother charter, how does that filter out? You know, it's like, well, which one do you mean? Because, you know, we have this one, you know, that we can't, you know, we can't ride any kind of Japanese motorcycles or use these kind of tires. That was one of our unwritten bylaws. You know, it feels a little odd.
And of course, the disconnect between we're outlaws, but we play by a very specific set of codes. You know,
it's like pirate law.
Pirate law, yeah. So,
and
motorcycle law
learned,
is not yet fully, you know, that's a growth field.
So there's a lot of entry points for expansion.
I think there's opportunity. The motorcycle gang laws and law and order is you know.
So we could be consultants.
I am not technically authorized to practice law in the fictional Charming California, but
the Charming Bar is a whole different animal from the California Bar.
But that's never stopped me before, you know.
Right. Well, we just, you know, clubs come to us and say, you know, here are some of the issues we've got with some of our, you know, unwritten bylaws, and we're like, well, look, you got to start writing some of this stuff down. Number one.
I will tell you a story about motorcycle law when we're not recording. Remind me later. Yes. So.
Oh, fantastic. And by the way, little carryover, one of my favorite all-time villains in any movie was at the table of the presidents, and I don't remember his name.
It's Robert Patrick.
Robert Patrick.
No.
It wasn't Robert Patrick.
Well, he's always good because I like Richard Patrick. No, it's Wayne Grove from Heat.
Oh
yeah.
Wow, that is esoteric.
That guy is like the best bad guy ever, and like he gets such minimal roles, but I love him.
I'm glad that they had Robert Patrick in this episode and they didn't have Borowski, because I think I might have gotten a little confused if they had Terminator and RoboCop in the same episode. I feel like that is too many streams crossing. So,
oh, very much so. And the other president seemed to have some sort of jaw issue, because as he talked, his mouth moved sideways, or his jaw moved sideways, and words came out. It was the most crazy thing, like a puppet.
No, the whole thing was just very sad, and you look around these old men and they're like, why did they think Jax was qualified or equipped to lead the club anyway? So what's going to happen to Tig? Because that's the one character I'm still really invested in.
I'm hoping he's okay. Yeah. I kind of feel like maybe they're not going to do much with him, right? There's always that question of, like, have they already, and you know, I thought Mark was going to come back, but maybe the Mark story is closed. The Mark story is that he went to jail, and that complicates his legitimate business interests, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe the Tig story is closed because we know he's going to go back and be with Venus, and that they'll be okay, and they'll make it work. And that was, you know,
he's the one guy who gets a happy ending, really. Yeah.
So to speak.
Because, you know, Chibs isn't really going to settle down with Jerry.
I'm not seeing it.
No, and they keep pressing on that relationship, and I think that they're setting us up for there to be some horrible thing happening there, too.
I was also, because there was at least one line that I don't think was a throwaway where, like, Jax asked him about that maybe implied that that's going to be part of some ridiculous Machiavellian, you know, many moving parts payoff where, you know, but I don't know.
Well,
I have a lot of hopes for this last episode. You know,
they're giving a lot of allusion to a huge battle.
Yeah,
I mean, it seemed almost kind of like of epic proportions, where there's going to be a black on brown Like,
and the sons are in there somehow. Yeah. Who knows?
Because there was this whole thing where it's like, at the start of the episode, we're going to have, like, this meeting, and we're going to hash it all out. And then, like, the same day, it's like, we got to do little check-in, like, upkeep the peace meetings with pretty much everybody who was in that meeting. It's like, how sustainable is this? Is that the future of the Sons of Anarchy? You just got, you guys go around every day and check in with people and do fetch quests for them and make sure that, you know, that the lines on the map are maintained.
And maybe they completely disband and you know, set up a shop for
they had
you know,
a shop.
Gang.
They had one, and it just keeps getting blown up.
Right. I mean, well,
they technically
gang
still
repair. It's gang repair rather than automobile repair.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
they
tow
bodies.
Like, they could become like they could be conflict mediators.
That would be awesome.
Maybe Tig becomes a justice of the peace. I think I may be descending into the level of Sons of Anarchy fanfiction, so that's, you know.
I think you are. I think this is a sign we need to stop. I think you've said everything we need to say.
I apologize for everything.
Next thing you know, I'll say something about Doctor Who.
No, wait, stop. Okay.
I think we covered all the questions I had and on my list of what will happen next, and we've got some good speculation. How could we be wrong?
Exactly. Well, I've been wrong about, I can't tell you how much it breaks my heart that I was wrong about the rat theory, because I really, really wanted him to be part
that
of the
was you writing. You were writing fan fiction, and you started to believe
it. That was my elaborate Sons of Anarchy.
Because we saw it in this episode, like, he killed people. We see that in the montage where he's shooting up the Chinese, so like, yeah.
Oh yeah, no, he's all in.
So his story may be closed too, which is unfortunate because it seemed like that could
happen. Well, because
it seemed more interesting
where
he's
like, I don't know how to be both an outlaw and a human being.
It turns out you wrote a more interesting story than Kurt Sutter did. Sorry.
Yeah, and she's all, well, I'm crazy, and he's like, well, then things are complicated. Derp derp. And
I just don't see how you can do a finale at, let's say, 2 hours. I don't know how we're going to fill that time.
No.
We'll see. They can pad it with some car chases and some, you know, people having to go from
one. A little jazz montage.
Well, they're going to have to, there's going to be, I mean, it seems like they've had the big episodes with gunfights and car chases, but probably there's going to be something where Borowski is complicated to get to, and there some doors will get kicked in and some windows will get thrown, people thrown through them and whatnot. And there'll be a little bit of action, but definitely this is the loose ends getting tied up. So,
okay. Yeah. So let's just go with, this is the hit list. Borowski dies, right?
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Jax dies. Yes.
Yes.
I'm going yes.
I think the only people left staying, to be honest, are like Tig and Rat and possibly Chibs. Possibly. But I reserve my right to, change my mind about that too.
Okay. I could see Chibs. I think it's going to be Montez is a throwaway. He's going to die.
Yeah. I mean, all the other, Quinn and all those guys,
they're just there.
Yeah.
To
they
die.
Don't matter. Yeah. Sorry guys who only get one line of dialogue a season. I'm sure you're nice people. Please don't hurt me.
I think Happy goes out in a uniquely demented blaze of glory kind of way. I think
holding
he's going to go
grenade
out with
or something.
No, like he's going to have like somebody's throat in his teeth and guns on either side. It's just going to be, he's going to be heartbroken and all torn up, and he's going to go out in a blaze of idiocy. It's coming.
Okay. So, and now, I'm trying to think of Althea. Can she die? No.
She might.
I say
away.
No. Yeah. I think she walks.
I feel like she's kind of, she's not to a certain extent important enough to factor too much into things, right?
No. My question, my big thing is what happens to the kids, because they've really raised the stakes on that.
I don't know. I really hope. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, by the time Jax gets back, they're gone. They're going to be down at.
Well,
or
he's back.
Up.
He's back. He's already back. Like, that's remember the final scenes were. And this is what I was rage tweeting about actually on Tuesday night. Is it's like an 8-hour drive between Central California and Oregon, and so somehow over the course of a day where like people got up and like went to school,
he
and
does it round trip. Yeah.
Well, no, not only that, like Unser beat him there.
Yeah.
But Jack somehow rides the 8 hours to Oregon, like. Converses with his mom, rides home, the blood on his sneakers is still red and wet instead of being brown and dried like it would have been if it had been out there for 8 hours in the ripping wind. So he comes home, he sits down for like literally 10 seconds on his tacky pleather couch, and then Wendy comes over and he's like, you know how I like to top off an evening of killing a parent? X-sex. And I guess that was like Charlie Hunnam's last contracted, rear end shot or something, because then we get what looks like a genuinely painful experience. And I'm just like, where does he find the energy? How is this happening? So it was just, ugh.
I agree.
It really irritates me how they act. Like, I guess charming is really just like a teleportal to someplace else, because they're always popping into Oakland on a moment's notice.
It's very conveniently located. So.
All right, so we're going to wrap up. This week, we're a little angry over how easy Gemma's death was. We are thinking that Unser, it's a matter of good riddance to a life poorly lived. And we're grateful that Juice has been put out of his suffering. We think it was generally a pretty strong episode. And we are curious to see if next week is in line with any of our whack job predictions. For the TV flashcast of Sons of Anarchy, I am Lisa Schmeiser.
I'm Phil Moslak, and I shoot with cancer bullets.
I'm just Tony Sindelar.
All right, and we'll see you next week. Thanks so much, guys.